Hey, I'm Adam Carolla.
I'm Dr. Drew.
And we are here to ask you to do us a little favor. If you like what you hear, share it with a friend.
Nice. Keep the pirate ship afloat, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only advertising we got. But it's the best kind.
It is.
Word of mouth.
It is.
Whose mouth?
Yours. Not yours, theirs.
Theirs.
Theirs, yes.
That's right. Thank you in advance for telling a friend, and enjoy the show.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Gotta get it on. No choice but to get it on. How you doing, Mr. Carolla?
Mandate.
Mandate, get it on. I beg your pardon. I screwed that up. I thought I had it perfectly. Mandate, get it on. Well, it's Dr. Drew flying solo here for a couple minutes. Carolla, the master, the captain of this ship, phoned in and said, tell Drew to get started. I'll be there in just a second. So I'm sure he will be here in just a moment. We can, of course, take your calls, and I'll try to get to a couple. I probably got to take care of business, too. You know, why wait till he's here? No, wait till he's here for that. All right. A reminder, I'll just get all the business out of the way that he normally gets into, which is subscribe via the PayPal button. $5 a month, is that what he asked for?
Yeah, you can subscribe. Pay
subscribe,
$5 a month.
$5 a month, keep this pirate ship afloat. Also, click through at the Amazon banner at AdamAndDrewShow.com. I think people get confused about that, and they click through on either my website or Adam's website. That does not support this show. You have to go to the AdamAndDrewShow.com site, then click through on the Amazon or bookmark that to keep this show afloat. Or the PayPal thing is the other way to do it. And please do support the people that advertise, because we tend to have good advertisers that have good products. And we talk about – we always have good advertisers. And the products that we talk about here on the air that we say we use, we actually use them. I mean, things like LegalZoom and Stamp and GoToMeeting, we use these guys. And so it's easy to advocate on their behalf. Also, a reminder, Volume 1 of the Adam and Drew Reunion Tour highlights from the first three shows, which were Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, and Denver. It's available at the AdamCarolla.com, iTunes, and at DrDrew.com, right, Chris Maxipata?
Correct.
And by the way, any of you interested in learning about Mr. Maxipata or Mr. Gary Smith here, who are the phantom voices behind the glass, you can go to DrDrew.com and listen to the Dr. Drew podcast.
On Monday, this coming Monday.
Which will be this coming Monday. You can hear these interview with these two young men and find out who they actually are. Not merely the robots that scatter when the captain approaches. They're actually people. Please don't anybody tell Mr. Carolla, but they are actually people and they have an interesting history. Gary particularly is on some interesting stuff these days. No, don't want to bust his balls, but you'll have to listen to find out. all right. Do we have any calls up there, guys?
They're coming in right now.
All right. If not, I want to read you guys something that just came through to me. It's something from last week, but it's something I know Adam is going to go insane over, and you're going to hear nothing but this for a while. The gentleman who was convicted basically for treason, for releasing military secrets, Bradley Manning, has now come out and said, he's been dealing with some issues, and that's why he was under stress, and that's why he was struggling with his conscience, and maybe that's had something to do with why he released these issues, this confidential material that may have resulted in the death of God knows how many people. But anyway, he's struggling. Let me read you the headline. Bradley Manning wants to live as a woman, be known as Chelsea. You guys aware of this? Did you guys hear about this?
No, I mean, I'm following that case. Did that just come out today?
Yeah. He wants a sex change operation. Now, this is what a sex change. The Leavenworth military prison must provide the hormones and must pay for the operation. Carolla's never going to get over this. He's going to become apoplectic. I'm actually concerned. I'm actually worried about telling him about this. Listen, here's my thinking on this. I am deeply appreciative of how awful it must be to have sexual identity disorder and to be so conflicted about your sexual identity and to want to change. But you are a fucking high treason criminal. I'm just thinking about what George Washington would say when somebody committed treason. The guy's like, yes, 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 I did. I'll go to prison. But while I'm there, I need you guys. I got a couple notes for you. I need you to take care of this for me. How far do we have to go with treating the mental health of military prisoners? I'm just saying.
Well, I think we should go as far as we can with treating the mental health, but I don't know if we necessarily need to be paying for physical transformations.
Well, careful. Well, if I were,
I'm ignorant on this.
It's not an unjust argument. But if you argue that, then we must pay for his hormones at least, because that's what he needs to be congruent with his mental health. So we would pay for his antidepressants, probably, right? We would probably pay for his hormones. Pay for the surgery, really? We got to do that? That I got a problem with. I mean, I guess sort of stabilizing mental health is one thing, but trying to do definitive care while somebody. He's not just a petty larceny. This is a high treason. High treason. Maybe many deaths at his hands. I think it's lucky that he didn't get a death penalty or a lifetime in prison. I mean, he should be thankful about that, right?
Yeah, I mean, treason.
Again, I'm no expert in these things, but I'm just saying. I'm not saying he should have gotten death penalty or should have gotten life in sentence. I'm saying he should be thankful he didn't after committing treason. Is there no such thing as treason anymore? I can't wait to tell Adam about this. I can't wait. He's going to lose his – he's going to go crazy. But there, anyway, in this one article I read, I just want to read you because I think he got it just right, this one guy. Let's see. If Fort Leavenworth doesn't – it's his attorney. I'm hoping Fort Leavenworth would do the right thing and provide that, meaning the hormone replacement therapy requested of the Leavenworth prison. This is Mr. Coombs, who is the attorney. If Fort Leavenworth does not, then I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure they're forced to do so. It's an attorney. I want to read. I just think Chelsea Manning. John Poderhertz. He's a conservative pundit. Poderhertz. You may want to get this guy on the Corolla podcast. He summarized it this way by saying, this country has officially jumped the shark. I thought that pretty much summarized it. Whether you agree or disagree, we pretty much jumped the shark. You need to understand. Oh, please, goodness. Now he's saying he is saying he never really wanted to be public with this. The information came out. It was a leak. Huh? Funny how leaks can hurt people. Isn't that something? People not being respectful of people's privacy. Is it an internet leak that outed this guy?
Turnabout's fair play.
No, I don't think that. I understand people would. I think internet leaks are bullshit. I think people that sort of, you know, claim that privilege, I think they must. There's a weird thing going on where the rights of the individual have taken supremacy or have taken primacy over the rights of everybody else. Hey, man, it's my right to free speech, so I can just say it. So if you really follow that logic, I should be able to yell fire in a crowded theater because it's my right to free speech, man.
Yeah, the individuals become bigger than the majority.
Bigger than everything.
Yeah.
Bigger than the community. So the individual rights – this is why we have shootings at Sandy Hook because, well, you can't force this kid to take meds. I mean, his right not to take meds. Mom doesn't want him to take meds, so what are you going to do, man? What you're going to do is you have an expert evaluate this guy. And if the expert says, hey, this kid could be dangerous. Same thing with the Colorado shooter. I feel so bad for that psychiatrist that evaluated him. I guarantee you she was hoodwinked by a committee that she told them this kid is trouble, needs to be on meds, and was superseded by somebody who said, oh, who are you to say, man? Hey, he's just an odd kid. What? So what, man? He can live his life however he please. Now, we know. Experts know. And let's say we make a mistake 1% of the time. Saving hundreds of lives, is that all right? Is that okay? I heard something. Where did I hear this? The vaccine thing was getting me the other day. There's now, remember Arthur Kaplan, who we had on Dr. Drew podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you can give me the episode. He's an ethicist. Did we talk about vaccines with him? He's now making the rounds talking about vaccine therapy and saying the vaccines are not completely effective, particularly if they're exposed to large concentrations of, say, a virus like measles. What episode was that?
That was 72.
Episode 72, Arthur Kaplan, great ethicist. He's at NYU now. Is that where he is? Columbia, something like that.
I think he's in D.C., but let me check.
I was going to say D.C., but for some reason New York City came to mind. Any event, or Penn.
My mistake, NYU and University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, okay, University of Penn and NYU. He's saying, though, if your kid, if you make a poor choice and you elect not to protect your children against a potentially life-threatening illness and that child gets sick and then other people's children get sick by virtue of this large pool of virus now being exposed to your kid and the vaccine not being satisfactorily efficacious to fight off a large pool, large concentration of virus – you can be sued. A parent can sue a parent. You can sue the parents for not vaccinating their kids, for not protecting the community. So to me, that was the first move where we see the community being able to push back. I like that. I'm not into suits of any kind, but I like the idea that we can kind of – that somebody can go, hey, you, your individual freedoms, which I respect, go make the poor choice, but understand their consequences, those poor choices. There are consequences. We – the rest of us that would like to be protected from your poor choices can take action. I think that's a very good thing. I'm going to take a call right now while we're waiting for Mr. Corolla. Brendan, 27. Brendan, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
All right. What's happening?
So, big fan of the show.
Thanks.
Et cetera. thanks for DraftKings. I'm finally just getting into that, so I appreciate you putting it out there, and now I'm pretty turned on to it.
Cool.
So, here's my question is, I have a friend that... kind of guy I've known since high school, a little bit timid, doesn't really show himself socially to in front of females, didn't really get any dates in high school, and didn't same thing in college. And now he's kind of gotten to this thing where he's dated and almost exclusively just kind of off the boat Asian women.
Meaning people that – meaning what?
Well, like they're in this country for the first time, and I feel like I don't want to sound racist, but it's almost like he's going for maybe it's just cultural or personality type, that he's going for women that kind of he's not really scared of.
Right. No, I think you're right. I know it's funny you would pick that up. That's what I pick up on too. He's going for people that he doesn't perceive as like him. So therefore, not really people. As horrible as that sounds, I think you're right. But by the same token, let's just say he has a terrible anxiety disorder, like a social anxiety disorder. It's an interesting and strange strategy to allow him to make contact. I'm certain that once he's made contact, people become people. You know what I mean? It's not like he's an unfeeling sociopath, right?
Right. No, absolutely not. This guy's just a very timid, pale guy.
He's a very scared guy, and this is his way of sort of managing that. I agree with you. It's a horribly racist and bizarre sort of twist.
Right.
But it's working for him, right? He's able to then have relationships once he overcomes the anxiety of having to approach a person.
Right. And for my point as kind of the buddy in his corner is that, you know, he's kind of – now he's in his mid-20s, kind of coming to his own, where I feel like if he kind of just dropped that idea in his head that he could kind of, and I'm not saying he has to change the type of women he dates, but he's not picking up on, in social situations when we're together, that, hey, just because this chick is a white chick doesn't mean that, or, you know, or whatever, that she might not be into you. Like,
well, let's remind him, he may be very attracted to Asian women. It's not the fact that they're Asian. It's the fact that he perceives them as to be sort of, I guess, vulnerable is the right word. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I've also seen him in middle school strike out and high school strike out, and all of a sudden, over the course of college, it kind of turned into this sort of type that he had.
Yeah, but everyone has a type. I'm just saying, though, that the issue is not the type. The issue is the fact that they are not from his culture, not from his, you know what I mean? So he perceives them as not being able to respond in the same way or with the same cues as somebody that is from around here. I get your concern. I think concern is well placed. I don't think you're going to change his type, so to speak, but at least expand out what he's doing, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right. Well, hopefully you can help your friend. I mean, try to point out to him that what he's doing seems sort of bizarre and I'm not sure he wants to be that person that somebody would say is behaving in that fashion. Brian, what's up?
Adam and Drew, get it on. I'm a big fan. Been listening for many, many years. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, I got a question about my usage of marijuana. I feel like it's been kind of affecting my sex life, or so my girlfriend thinks so.
Yeah, it will. If you smoke enough of it, it always does. It lowers testosterone. It increases estrogen. It actually can cause breast growth in some age groups. And, it would decrease your libido, decrease your ability to have an orgasm. So that's, you have to smoke a lot of it, though, to get that.
I do smoke a lot. I've been a daily smoker for probably, I'm 27. I've been smoking since probably 19. And it's not that I necessarily want to give it up. I'm not a heavy, heavy smoker. It's a little bit, it's daily. I mean, I don't really know how you define heavy smoker, but it's daily, small amount. But it's usually an issue where smoke in the evenings and I can't climax, but in the morning, once it's all weared off, I usually don't have any issues with it.
There you go. That makes perfect sense to me.
I guess that's probably the correlation. But the other part of it is that, since it's becoming an issue for my girlfriend, I'm starting to get to the point of considering whether or not I should stop. And as I start considering that, I realize it doesn't seem possible for me. I really don't want to stop. And I'm wondering if I'm to the point where maybe I need to seek additional help. But, I mean, I don't feel like it's been detrimental to me. I've held a job down steady. I'm well-adjusted.
Right. Well, but addiction is defined by effects on work, school, relationships, health, finance, or legal status. So here you're having relationship consequences. And what's really interesting about it is you're saying I love pot more than I love my girlfriend, which is fine. That's the fact. And I even love it more than sex and climaxing, which is interesting also. And that's what everyone that gets hooked on these drugs feel. They feel like they've never loved anything as much as these drugs. And and eventually there are consequences, and eventually you have to think about it.
So what then would be the best way to, I guess, draw down off of it, not necessarily have to come off completely? Because when I tried stopping in the past, it creates, like, very, very difficult sleeping situations, and I can't eat. Like, I'll lose weight over a matter of a week trying to stop.
Yeah, that's called drug. That's drug withdrawal, and it lasts about 6 weeks to 12 weeks even sometimes. But certainly a good 6 weeks of bad sleep. You could do a couple things. You could keep smoking pot until you really have to do something. You could see a doctor who has some experience treating the cannabis withdrawal syndrome. You could try to cut down to three times a week or something and just see what happens, see if you're able to. You might be able to. Perhaps it would, perhaps you'd be able to do that. I don't know. It's pretty hard to do. And if you try to stop on your own and you can't, then there's a group out there that has a room full of Brians that all have the same story, which is what's fascinating about it. And so those are your options, really.
Well, I appreciate it. I guess I'll have to look into something locally, because I don't think I really do love pot more than my girlfriend and more than sex. It's when faced with what's the consequence on either side, the consequence. Not smoking is clamming up at night, not being able to sleep, not being able to eat, whereas the other side, I mean, I lived without sex for 18 years, so I figure I can go for a little while longer every now and then, but...
Try to imagine somebody else listening to what you're saying. I'm looking at Chris and Gary, they're going, oh my God, I can't believe he's saying that. But because that's saying I'll do anything to keep smoking pot. I'll give up everything as long. And by the way, the withdrawal is only a few weeks. It's not like it's 6 months. It's a few weeks of withdrawal, and there are treatments for it. I mean, I treat it all the time. We use a lot of risperidone. If you want to talk to your doctor about that, it works very, very well for the cannabis withdrawal.
What's it called again?
Risperidone.
Risperidone.
Yeah, okay. We use a lot of that. It helps out. But you can get really paranoid too in those first few weeks. You get very irritable, very paranoid, no sleep, sweaty. Aches. It's really unpleasant. Moody.
Okay.
I understand. And if you're keeping using a drug to avoid withdrawal, think about the implications of that too. All right?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, Brian. Good luck.
You,
you bet. Anytime. Bye. And this now is Matt. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, Drew. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. My question is, I'm moving out to Los Angeles on Saturday from Delaware. I'm going to USC Dental School.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone out there. I don't really know anything. The only person I know is the admissions director, and I just wanted some like tips about living in Los Angeles and how to make the most out of my time being a 24-year-old.
I did the same thing. Came out here from New England. I was from out here, but I really never lived out here as an adult. Went to USC Medical School and didn't know anybody really, and had the time of my life. You'll make great friends in your class. There's tons of things to do here. Where are you living?
Right now we're in Santa Monica, but it's like temporary. We're living with a friend who I met like on the USC housing list.
Yeah, but
I've only talked to her on the phone.
Nothing better than Santa Monica. You're living in Nirvana, basically. You're living by the beach. I mean, you're going to have a crazy drive. That's going to drive you insane. That's a long way. Depending what time of day you have to be there. If you have to be there at 9 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning for classes, you may have to leave at 6:30 or maybe before. Guy, Chris, what do you think of going from Santa Monica to SC at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning?
That's
hour and a half, right?
That's a mission, yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
I think during orientation week, we're going to try to find a place closer and like and cheaper to near the school, probably like a Koreatown or something.
There's a lot. Oh, that's cool. There's a lot of stuff downtown now these days, and in Pasadena, South Pasadena. But Gary just ran out of here. He was a single guy in Los Angeles. What are your advice there's so much to do here. It's ridiculous. I mean, you're busy studying anyway, so I would just stick close to your classmates. And we ended up doing just all kinds of stuff. There's always
plenty of stuff. You just got to look for it.
Yeah. You'll meet people. I mean, don't worry about it. I mean, if you put yourself out there, people will. There'll be plenty to do. I would say don't expect much from the SC undergraduate life that they tend to keep to themselves. The grad students really are a different world.
Okay.
And any advice for him living in Los Angeles single?
Where are you living?
Well, at first Santa Monica, but he's going to try to get more closer to downtown.
Yeah,
there's
definitely.
So much. I mean, just, what do you? I mean, I think I almost don't want to tell him because he's going to be busy studying a lot of
time. I would definitely try to move closer to downtown because being close to where you work or go to school is paramount in L.A. I mean, you'll drive yourself insane.
I mean, think if he has 8 o'clock classes at USC, what time does he have to leave from Santa Monica to get there?
Well, exactly, and especially coming from somewhere like Delaware, which I don't know very well, but I would imagine there's not a ton of traffic.
He's never seen this. Yeah,
yeah, you're not going to like living in – you'll like the area in Santa Monica, but you're not going to have a ton of social life if you're in dental school. So try to be close to where you
will.
Are.
The student, at least in medical school, we stuck together and did all kinds of stuff.
But I think most people who are going live
down there
will live down there.
Yeah.
And downtown, frankly, is getting better every single day. It's a nice place. There's places you can walk around and do stuff.
I came out for the interview, I went to like a Lakers game, so I got to see like LA Live and stuff, and that seemed like a cool area.
Oh, it's crazy.
That area is even – like you go 4 blocks in any direction from LA Live. It's really cool now. It didn't used to be like that. You didn't used to want to live downtown, but now it's nice. I would try to get down there and just go out and make friends. Go out to LA Live. There's plenty of stuff.
It'll be exciting for you. It's a good time. I never had more fun than my first 4 years of medical school.
Okay, sounds good.
It'll take care of itself, all right?
All right, sweet.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Drew.
Bye. Let's see. Let's talk to. We have an update on Corolla. Is he approaching? Is he nearby?
Based on history, he should be here in the next 3 to 5 minutes.
All right, let's talk to Josh. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Drew. It's an honor.
Pleasure's mine. What's going on?
Well, I have a couple questions. So, over the past couple of years, we've heard a lot about athletes. Start with like Mark McGwire, and then Lance Armstrong, and most recently, Alex Rodriguez using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yep.
So normally, all I hear in the media is the downside of performance-enhancing drugs is that it gives somebody an unfair advantage as far as the sport is concerned. Allows Lance Armstrong to pedal a bike 100 miles uphill and A-Rod to jack 300 home runs, wherever it is. I'm trying to figure out, and not really for myself, but just as a general question, are there any physical downsides to using performance-enhancing drugs? Because all I see is the upsides when it comes to what they can do for you physically.
Oh, absolutely. It depends what you're talking about. But anabolic and androgenic steroids, there's profound concern about increasing vascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes. Obviously, they increase your blood pressure, and that increases shear forces in the vessels and can cause intracranial bleeding and, again, progressive vascular disease. Prostate cancer, severe liver effects, kidney failure. There's even been reports of bizarre things like lymphomas and things being precipitated. And there are profound mood disturbances. People get extremely manic on this.
Roid rage.
But they get manic and do crazy shit. And then when they come off, I've had people commit suicide. And I've seen more of it than I care to think about. So there are only detrimental effects in terms of your biology and medical status. There's no therapeutic. There's performance enhancement. There is physical appearance change. And there's addiction. People get severely addicted to the anabolic and androgenic steroids. Usually it goes hand in hand with the stimulants, either speed or cocaine. But they get addicted to the high of it, they get addicted to the mania, and they get addicted to how they look. So there's tons of problems with it. When I used to work in a psychiatric hospital, we would see these guys all the time at the psych hospital.
Can I ask a question about this?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on recovering addicts using steroids?
They're not recovering.
That's what – okay.
They're in there. It's a stimulant. Listen, remember Randy – not Randy, Ed Jackson. What the crap? The guy from Baywatch.
Macho Man.
The guy we traded from – no. A guy traded from Baywatch in the last season of Celebrity Rehab. I'm blanking on his first name for some reason. I can see him as clear as day. Anyway, he was coming off – he eventually went out, of course, on stimulants.
Jeremy Jackson.
There we go. And he – when we went to his house, it was unbelievable the amount of growth hormone and androgenic steroids that were in his house. And he was – you know, Joey Kovar, the reason he died was steroids, categorically. That was the one drug he would never deal with. He stayed on it, and went out and died because of it. So it's a serious problem for drug addicts. Okay?
Got it.
All right,
thank
Josh.
You.
Good luck. All right. Let's see. All right. Let's talk to Catalina. Hi, Catalina. Catalina. Did I push the right button? She's on 4. Catalina, are you there? I hear her. Don't you guys hear her?
Hello.
Catalina, what's up?
Yes. My question was, again, could somebody that's heavily inundated into drugs, and I mean like a pattern of 30 years or 40 years, could be treated with the right program?
It's very difficult. Are we talking about opiates, painkillers?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm talking about.
Is that you?
No, I cannot name.
It's not you?
No, not me. Absolutely not me. My addictions, I've dealt with my demons, and I consider myself opiate-free and wine-free and all that free.
So you're on Suboxone or Methadone?
No, neither.
Okay.
Neither.
All right. Because when you say – whenever addicts talk about dealing with demons, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. Because addicts don't deal with demons. They just don't do drugs. And they try to live some
kind
of life.
I consider once an addict, always an addict. I do not
believe.
I don't believe at all in the word recovery, because to me, my addiction is always on the back burner, always in my mind.
Recovering. You're in the process of recovery all the time.
To say that you're free of that, never. It doesn't make sense to me.
No, it's a daily, hourly struggle, no matter what. And you're somebody who's been chronically opiate dependent most of their life. You're right. The prognosis is very bad. That's why people use replacement therapies like Suboxone or Methadone, and they have a slightly better track record with those replacement therapies. But they really aren't free of drugs. They're really not returning to a flourishing life until they're completely abstinent. I have seen people turn it around after many years. But, boy, you know, when you're in your 40s, 50s, and 60s with this, you're much more likely to die of it than recover. And so I understand that's why people go on these replacement therapies. In your question here that's on my board, it says something about Michael Jackson. Did you have a question specifically about him?
No, not really. I have somebody else in my life that has been like a long-term 30 to 40 years.
And it's so hard now because they get involved in, quote, so-called pain management, and the doctors prescribe this stuff to them, and they tell them, you can never get off this. And, of course, you tell an addict that, and they are never going to, but they love that. They become the best.
Just what I have read about Michael Jackson, he was over and over and over again in a 12-step recovery. And, you know, I hear from AA, you keep going back, it eventually works. And I've been to a couple of AA meetings, and I do believe that's true. You keep coming back, it eventually works. You know, you can't deal with something as that heavy.
Yeah.
On your own, it doesn't work.
That's right. And it's, the other thing that people miss is you have to change everything in your life, you have to get lots of support doing that. And in doing so, you have to be involved with other people on a daily basis, and often throughout the day, working on this issue. And you can't go it alone. And so you can't afford professionals 4 hours a day. And thank God, there's a self-help organization out there that can help support you through that.
Right. I do agree with you on that. You know, nobody needs to go it alone.
You can't. It just doesn't work.
The person I'm talking about is still heavily on my mind because, like, he's going into stealing and stealing money and stealing, you know, stuff. And so I'm concerned that it's that he's there again.
Well, of course
that he's doing it again.
Of course he is. If he's stealing, yeah. Of course. Catalina, of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he's using. If he's stealing,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And listen, sometimes prison is the best thing. It's life saving for some people. Not that they can't.
I think that's where he's headed. Exactly. I absolutely agree with you there because, yeah, we've dealt with this almost 40 years now. We're not family. And it weighs heavy on my heart, but it is what it is.
All right, Kelly, good luck with that. Maybe go to some Al-Anon program. Again, being just like you can't go it alone with your addiction, it's hard to go it alone loving somebody with addiction. I don't go into a room treating patients. I try not to anyway. I rarely go in. Alone. I always bring a nurse or somebody with me because if you go in alone, they will suck you right down that rabbit hole. Not intentionally. It's just how that disease works. Okay, Leslie, what's going on?
Hey, so Drew, I was hoping for some help psychoanalyzing Adam about a topic. So he seems like he's really good at treating people well, all of his employees. He's always nice to full-tard Gary and to other people that need him. But whenever he's questioned, he seems to snap pretty quick and put people down for how much money he pays them or for how they work at the Corolla show. And I'm curious why you think he snaps so fast.
Well, first of all, I'm not a psychoanalyst, so I can't really do that, but I can speculate about what's going on here. Let's kind of think about it out loud. I've never seen Chris and Gary look more nervous than having,
that's a lie. Stop. We're just sitting here.
I have seen you look more nervous when I actually made you come in here to do a podcast with me that you look pretty nervous then. Well, let's just first start from the standpoint of the fact that he calls an employee full-tard. You don't think that's a little abusive just to start with, even when, out of the best of terms? Calling somebody half-tard or full-tard is a little bit pejorative at best?
Yeah, no? That's true.
Okay, so
I'm just curious about the distinction between doing really nice things, like from the hammer, the way that he treats his buddy. Like, I think that's really true in the way that I see he acts with people.
How he treats...
When they're in need.
I think what he's saying is the fact that he keeps Ozzy and he keeps Gary employed, people who need someone.
But he treats Ozzy like shit
in
real life.
I think what he's saying is he keeps them employed and tries to make sure that they have work when they need it.
He's got a very, very keen moral compass about what's right and what's wrong. And he is very good about trying to take care of people. But he talked to Ray or talked to Ozzy about how he treats them underemployed. It's overtly abusive. And the abuse is, and we've talked about it in this podcast a million times, which is he perceives what he's trying to do as good for them, which I'm abusive to you because you won't correct your behavior in line with what I'm asking you to do. And if you would just adopt what I'm telling you to do, not only would it no longer impinge on him, it'd be good for them. It'd be just, you know, the prime example was the dog leash at the hook at the door. With Lynette, and poor Lynette is the object of this all the time, and so he gets very aggressive and very abusive and very, he has a problem with people not listening to him and changing, and he doesn't realize how tough change is for people. I mean, there's a reason people do behave the way they do because that's the pattern, that's what fits for them, and they have trouble changing. It's really tough, and so he kind of sees it as his obligation almost. To kind of browbeat somebody into changing, does that sound right?
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. And the nicknames he gets, like full tard and half tard,
those are well meaning. Those are affectionate terms.
They are. Well, he doesn't. There's no hate behind it.
No.
Or anything. It's playful. He thinks it's funny.
Yeah. Maxipata.
It is mostly funny. I mean,
Like, no. I'm being funny when I take issue with the name.
Yeah.
It's more problematic for people that. Are mentally challenged. He throws these words around.
Like I hear him on the phone talking to Gary Butters, and he's very polite and very nice, and says like, "Hey, buddy, how's it going?"
Yeah,
Stuff like that. So it's not.
When Gary didn't do the closet, when he didn't knock down the closet,
well,
if
you mess up, you'll hear about it.
it becomes passive aggressive too, because now it's going to be, "What did you think I meant by those?" When we put X's on the wall, what does that mean, Gary? What do you think that meant? What do you think that meant when I put – and whatever Gary
He'll
says –
dress you down.
Yeah, whatever Gary says back is unacceptable. It's absolutely impossible. And some of it, again, is I appreciate it from the standpoint of low self-esteem, which I share with him, which is, hey, if I understand these things, certainly you can. You know what I mean? If a retard like, well, I hate to use that word. I'm trying not. It's hard not to use it around here. Really. It's thrown around.
You're speaking in Adam's voice.
By so. Speaking in, right. If somebody as incompetent as me can pull this stuff off, certainly you can. Because I'm sure he's as hard on himself as he is on other people. No? Gary says no?
No. He definitely is. He expects a high standard from everyone, including himself. And he's very fair. And the stuff that you hear on the show, although
Some of it is exaggerated for
right.
effect.
I mean, yeah. I stand by the fact that Adam is the same person on air as off air, but he's never called my cell phone and when I picked up and like, half darned. That's not the way it is. It's
right.
different.
Like, right.
He respects us. I mean, it's
although my phone is Max. My name is Max Pata.
I'm half hard in the phone, but he never like. That's never how
I called you,
me.
Max Pata.
Yeah.
Thinking it was actually your name, but I'm the one that was guilty of that. Okay, why don't we take a break and then we come back? We'll return with the man himself.
Sounds good.
All right.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, we talk about Mogambo, a great movie, a John Ford movie with Grace Kelly and Ava Gardner, the most gorgeous women ever in the most gorgeous movie ever. Come and let me tell you about it here. It's for free on iTunes or the Adam Carolla app. We'll see you here.
Yeah, I'm back.
No shit.
Just getting in a big argument with Lynette. You know, every time I argue with Lynette, she brings you up.
Really?
Don't act surprised. Like, Drew agrees with me when I... And I'm like, listen, everybody agrees with you. And I, you know, I understand what I say to Lynette all the time is she always does the, everyone says you're this way. And I go... I am this way. And I go, the reason I am this way is because I'm always trying to build a house, coming off of working the night before, trying to build a new studio, doing a phoner and trying to whatever. And I'm just walking and talking. You ever see those? Remember those 80s movies where the boss would be walking through the office and people would be following them?
Yes.
And he'd go, what do you want to do with the Johnson account? Buy low and sell high.
Yeah,
and
they just keep going.
Then someone would hand him a phone. And that's what I feel like I'm doing.
But what if you were to do less and spend more time focused on her, I think is what her question is.
That's what I'm working towards.
Seriously?
No. What I'm saying, the crux of like part of our argument was if you, this is me pointing at her,
she worked more.
You jump into this Mangria thing, you figure out ways to sell 100,000 cases a year, and then I'll get off the road, and then we can have some nice weekend time by the pool. Because right now I'm going on the road. But you ain't doing the Mangria thing, and that's why I'm pissed.
Yeah.
So we had that one.
Yeah.
It was a big one.
Yeah.
But I think it ended pretty nicely.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, my problem in life is everybody can go somewhere and go sit down and have a conversation about the boss man. I'm holding my fingers up in quotes.
Yeah.
You know. But... unfortunately, there's elements of being the boss man that require that. Doesn't make you have to...
being a certain way.
You don't have to be an asshole.
Yeah.
But the problem is when you say to somebody, hey, those color swatches you want me to look at for the color in the kitchen, don't paint them on the laundry room wall. Paint them in the middle of the kitchen so I can see them against the cabinets and the tile.
Yeah.
And then you come back the next day and they're on the wrong wall.
Right.
You're in such a rush... that you go, hey, what about this? And then they go, hey, what's with the attitude? And you're like, the attitude's coming from me being incredibly busy.
Yes.
But they're just feeling the attitude.
Yes, I get it. I used to be way more that way when I was practicing medicine full time. I think about the way I was, and I'm sort of embarrassed now. But it wasn't nothing personal. It was just, hey, man, I'm busy. Let's get this shit done. And by the way, people's lives are on the line. Let's get going.
Yeah. You know, no, not... I feel that way. That's the problem. I think the problem is nothing personal.
Yeah.
That's the problem when it comes but to your wife. Because what I'm saying is, I am saying nothing personal. I'm saying put the color swatches on the middle of the kitchen so I can see them against the tile, like I said before. And that's all I want. But it becomes personal.
But two things. You could say to yourself, oh, if I'm starting to get that way, it probably means I'm working too hard. I got to be careful. It'll affect my relationships, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they can put that screen in. If you have the luxury to, by the way, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the problem. You and I are both the same way. And the question is when. But my feeling is take something like Mangria. Hit it hard for 2 years. Travel around the country. Do all the glad handing. Stay at home and design the labels or the bottle, the shelf talkers or whatever, and then sell 100,000 cases a year and don't have to leave the house.
Easy street.
That's what I'm looking for.
Just before the commercial break, a guy asked about you being snappy towards some of the employees here.
Mm-hmm.
That very question. And I brought this up. And I also said that you usually say that it's you would argue it's for their benefit. That you're usually offering something that if they would adopt – And I also said it probably has something to do with low self-esteem, too, which I share with you, which is like, I'm that way to myself, and if I can get this shit going, certainly you can.
No, here's how I am. I'm two things. One, if I get tired, I get strung out, and then I get crabby.
By the way, I've warned everyone at doesn't apply.
Yes, but the point is I will get crabby if I get strung out
and
I get sleep deprived. So that's number one. Number two, I get shitty with people when I turn and look at something and I see some device, some piece of equipment, some part from a car or something. And I go, why is that there? And they go, I don't know. And I go, where's the car? And they go, it's in the other warehouse. And I go, put that with the car. And they go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Dumb to have it here.
Why did it happen in the first place?
I go past that part. It is what it is. Put that with the thing. And then at some point, a week and a half later, I'll be standing in the same place looking around, talking to someone. In the middle of talking to them, I'll look over and I'll see that part again. And I'll go, why isn't that part with the thing? And the person will say, yeah, I've been busy or I didn't have a chance to get around to it or whatever. And then I go pick up the part and I set it in the middle of the floor where basically you have to trip over it on your way out. And when I get persnickety because I am trying to do 28 things at once, and now you've made me double back to go do something that may or may not have gotten done. And then I get resentful because I'm like, I'm doing all this junk, and I have to keep doubling back to make sure whatever we were talking about the week before is getting done.
Yep.
And if you want to get me pissed off, that's the way to do it. The way to do it is I have this feeling, it's my efficiency thing. I have this feeling that, you know, we're on this earth for just a blink of an eye. Like it's just relatively, we don't have much time. As I scream at everyone, you think we live to 180, 200?
Even like, that's not much time.
Even that wouldn't be historically much time. But the reality is at our age, you know, we got 20 years to do what we got to do, and then we're dust, pretty much, or retired, or we have arthritic hip, or whatever. And that's if we don't get in the fiery van crash,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So what are we doing talking about nonsense?
Yeah.
That's the way I feel. Like, what are we doing doubling back and talking about nonsense? And
life then is too short.
It's too short for me. Mm-hmm. It's not too short for many other people. It's too long for a lot of people. And then I feel like you're dragging me into your world, like your
vortex.
Schedule, your vortex. And that's when I get with people. And I also generally I have a way I want something done. And that's usually the way I figured out this is the best way it's going to work. And that's that. But also, and you're probably this way, too. I don't have time. I have time for legitimate excuses, but I don't have time for I'm going to fire something back at you just because.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people
That's a big
do.
One for you. I'm not so much that way. Because I was thinking of that very issue when I was talking to the guy on the call a few minutes ago about this. Was Gary Fultard with the X's on the closet?
With the X's on the closet.
Well, he was supposed to knock the closet door. Was Gary supposed to knock the closet?
Oh, Gary Fultard.
Yeah.
Yes, I was demoing out a closet. I left him a note that said, demo out bedroom closet, and that means walls and all. And then I put X's on the walls in the middle of demoing out a bunch of walls with X's on them. That's all we'd done up until that point.
Demoing X'd out walls, yeah.
It wasn't, it wasn't a thing where we worked in a taffy factory and now we're making menudo. We're just making, there's more taffy to be made the next day. So you shouldn't be confused what we're going to do that day. And when I wrote demo, he wrote it as do no, even though it was D-E. The M could have been an N.
But he fired back at you, the point is. Fired back, and that now you're in.
Yes, now we're in, because not only did you not do what I wanted you to do, we're going to waste more time with you kind of explaining why and how.
Strangely,
and
though,
all
you,
that stuff.
You get into that, though. You get the passive-aggressive thing, and you go all the way in. That's you taking your hands off the wheel at the stop sign and just going, fuck you, man, I'm not going. That's your life ticking away while you do that.
I do. I have had that, and I will engage in almost anybody in that in that conversation. I mean, I had one with Gary where it literally he just go. I had this is a full tart. He was demoing something out, and I told him vacuum everything out, get it real clean, and let's get the dust out of here. And I walked over to the area. And there was like a chunk of wood where he was supposed to be vacuuming it out. And then I lifted the chunk of wood and it was like sort of covered in concrete dust. And I banged it out and it was full of shit. This happened yesterday. And I said, Gary, did you vacuum this out? And he said, yeah. And he said, I said, what about this chunk of wood that's covered with shit? He said, that wasn't there when I was vacuuming it out. I said, do you think somebody broke in and placed this piece of wood here after you'd vacuumed the place out? And he went, no, that's stupid. And I was like, right. Now vacuum it out. But
good. You're teaching him. That would have gone three more cycles if 2 years ago.
Yeah, could have. Yeah. It could have been. Could have gone a few more cycles. But yes, if I get sleep deprived, I get busy, I get persnickety, and then that's it. But I do have a thing where I go, here's what I'm asking for. Here's what I want. Go do it. And then everybody goes, I want to talk about it, or I want to know why you want me to do this. And you know, as a person who is busy, not trying to be rude, just saying, here's what we do. Here's what it is. And now I'm walking away.
Just imagine if you were in the military.
That's what it's like.
Sergeant, why do you want to, why here, man? Why do we set the machine gun here?
Why are we bivouacking here?
Right. Why?
Yeah, there's an element. Look, the boss needs to be the boss. And unfortunately, I get in this argument with Lynette all the time where she goes, you know, basically everyone loves me and everyone hates you. And I go, yeah, because I tell everyone what to do. I mean, she's nicer than I am.
Yes,
but
that's what she's saying.
But but the deal is if it was your money and it was your business and you were telling everyone what to do all the time, A, you wouldn't be quite as nice when it didn't get done. And then B, they wouldn't like you quite as much because you would be the one telling them.
Impinging on them.
Right. Like when I would come home and Ozzy would be sitting around my kitchen eating my mixed nuts and talking to my nanny, I would be the one who'd walk in the door and go, "What's Ozzy, what are you doing other than eating my shit? What are you working on?
What is Ozzy doing for you these days?
Nothing.
Is he still around?
No. No, he comes around to borrow tools from me, but he doesn't work. He's a horrible worker. So I would come in and go, Ozzy, what are you doing? And he'd go, I don't know. What do you want? I'm talking to Olga. You know, and I'd go, well, what are we working on? Well, waterproofing the deck. Well, let's.
So he's gone the way of Jim Carolla.
Yeah, he's gone the way of Jim Carolla. And it's like, of course, I'm the bad one. Lynette's not the bad one. Lynette's talking to Ozzy.
Right.
I'm the one who's paying for Ozzy. And I'm the one. Oops.
Two firsts today. Late. That's a first, my friend. By the way, I don't think you've ever been late to anything we've ever done.
Really?
Which I don't think so. Which is why we were all like, "Oh shit, is he okay? Is there a car accident? What's going on?" And we were, and then it was. Here's the great news about never being late. It's like, well, God bless him. You know what I mean? If you got to be late, I'm sure it's for a real good reason. And no one's angry. No one's upset. No one. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. No, yeah. I do think it's like calling in sick. If you call in sick every other week to work, everyone just rolls their eyes. Yeah. If you're Cal Ripken and you're the Iron Man and you've made it 10 years and you've never missed a day and you call in sick, everyone goes, whoa, he must be really
sick.
Yeah,
it's like, poor guy. It's like, what's going on?
But I think in life you earn that currency with everyone, good and bad. There's a very negative side of somebody complaining their back hurts, yeah, yeah, and like your back always hurts, and you seem to be fine when you want to go out and do, you know, when you want to play racquetball, yeah, or paintball, that's your thing. But now you're back. You're trying. I'm asking you to help me to move, and you're clinging clinging to your back. So that is true with me. And yes, the microphone.
That's number two.
What
so
I'm saying
the
is,
mic
is
another first.
It
another
is
another first. I'll tell you.
There is a balance.
Put this date down, Gary.
I'll put it to you this way, too. Jimmy is the nicest guy in the world, and he's the most thoughtful guy in the world, and he's the most courteous guy in the world, and he's the most generous guy in the world. But when it comes time to work, you're going to work.
Yeah.
And he may not say please and thank you.
Right.
He wants to work.
Yeah.
And that's why he is who he is. And then the second you're not working, then he's the easiest, friendliest, whatever. And there's an element of that in life that it's not just about, you know, puppy dogs and rose petals all the time. It'd be nice. But when it's time to work, it's time to work. And then when it's time to hang out and have some mangria, it's time to hang out and have some mangria.
Except I think there are some bosses that are kind of, it's a personality thing that they're, mm-hmm, people are, and I think people expect that's what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. Like Mr. Slate was Mr. Slate all the time, I bet.
From the
Jetsons.
Jetsons, yeah.
Mr. Slate.
Yeah.
Just put a picture, yeah, of Mr. Slate, mm-hmm, up there, please. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a narcissistic, yeah, blowhard.
Well,
all
no,
the time.
But
and so you get painted with that as the boss.
TV doesn't work in nuance or shades of gray.
Larry Tate, same guy when he was drinking as at the job.
Everyone is a cartoon character, right, literally and figuratively, on TV. But in real life, there's a lot of nuance.
True, but I've had some bosses that were particularly narcissist.
Oh, not to say there's not dickhead bosses straight through.
I'm saying you're getting painted with that.
I am.
You're getting that. It must be one of those guys.
I don't.
You know what I'm getting at?
I've had this argument with many people many times, which is, you're a dickhead boss, and I go okay, but I just had this situation where there's a woman, and her name is Verdell, mm-hmm, and she does great scenic painting work. She does great color and great things like that. And I last saw Verdell 10 years ago, and I've not spoken to her since. And I called Verdell 2 days ago, and she went, oh, hi. She's like South African. She has a crazy accent. And I said, I got some work for you. And she said, when? And I said, when do you want to get started? And she was like, tomorrow. And I was like, all right. And there she was. Yeah. Now, I don't live with Verdell.
Right.
But I do interact with Verdell. We do have these sort of creative whatever. It's about doing a scenic painting. I do have a lot of input. And then ultimately, I pay her as, yeah, well. If I was shitty with Verdell, or I didn't pay Verdell, or I stuck Verdell with whatever,
she wouldn't return your call.
She wouldn't pick up the phone, yeah, immediately and come over. Yeah. And every single person who's worked for me as a, now I'm talking about
independent
yeah, guys, and I'm just talking about whoever, electricians, yeah, whoever, whatever. I call them, they'll show up later that day.
Yeah.
Now, that is not someone who's been stiffed, screwed over, or verbally dressed down by an asshole.
Quickly, I want to change topics. We have just a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. You know the Manning, the guy that is convicted for treason?
Mm-hmm.
What's his first name?
Dexter.
No.
Bradley.
Bradley Manning.
Bradley
Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Headline just released. I thought you'd like to hear. Are you ready?
Well, just released.
A week ago. I mean, it was a week ago. But it was a headline that I've just come across. I thought you would, mm-hmm, be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Manning now must be referred to as Chelsea.
Oh, yeah.
And not only is he struggling with sexual identity issues, his attorney is insisting that the Leavenworth military prison pay for the hormones and the transformation and going to sue if they don't.
Well, the real that was one case that I thought about. The other case that I thought about was happened last week was, and I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it sounds like it's going to happen. The San Diego mayor, who's been groping every tit and grabbing every ass cheek within a country mile of him for, I don't know, the last 20 years, is not going to resign, but he will resign if the city agrees to pay all his legal liabilities.
Ugh.
Is that where we're at, by the way?
No, we have officially jumped the shark as a country. Officially, we're there now.
You're going to be sued by a baker's dozen of women who you sexually harassed, and you should resign with a big fat apology and tears, and I've sinned against you, Lord, and then go off and possibly commit suicide or just go off and go to some leper island and help. Instead, you defiantly say, I'm not going anywhere.
Unless you pay for it.
And if I do go somewhere, I'll go, but you're going to have to pay all these broads off. And then the city's going to get stuck with multi-million dollar sexual harassment lawsuits that the taxpayers are going to, and then you'll be fine with the taxpayers footing the bill for you not being able to prevent yourself from grabbing an ass.
I think he may be getting demented or something. That's a really start. He can't control himself. And something's wrong with that guy.
Insane.
Yeah,
all right,
something's wrong.
Let's get back to me.
But we've jumped the shark.
We're gonna
high treason. Imagine George Washington, like, sir, you're convicted of treason. I accept my penalty, but in the meantime, I got some notes for you.
Listen,
General Washington.
Those people have not jumped the shark. We, as a society that decides these people should get this, have jumped the shark.
The attorney's going after this, and then us backing down. Listen, this is not about gender identity. This is about what are we responsible for with people that are committing high treason?
Is he lucky
he didn't get shot by firing squad?
Listen, I feel like I've been running around this horrible land of ours screaming at the top of my lungs that there's a tsunami coming and we need to get to higher ground. And everyone goes, fuck you, I'm building at the beach. And I go, you don't get it. It's coming. And we all need to go to the top of the mountain. And everyone goes, first off, that's hate speech right there. That's hate speak. You talking about the tsunamis that way. And I'm going down to the beach. And that's about where we're at. And you know me. I know what's coming before it shows up.
Well, so what do we do? What can be done about it? What's it going to mean when it comes?
There's Texas and a handful of countries in Europe, I guess you can move to. That'll be that. I mean, that's going to be that.
There's no turning back?
It's hard to get shit back in the barn and unring bells and especially free shit back in. But I want to focus on me being a douche for a second. Now, Chris Maxipata,
hey,
will tell you we had a lovely weekend a couple weekends back in Monterey.
Oh, I saw the pictures.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I would say I was in a pretty good mood most of the time.
Yeah, great mood.
Cars, man.
And we're having a good time. We're drinking and, you know, carrying on.
Yeah,
eating,
saw the pictures.
All that kind of stuff. But I did get douchey for 8.5 minutes because at one point during Friday's early practice, or maybe it was, Saturday's race, I think it was.
Yeah, it was the other
race. We went down there to do some shows, do some racing, and I'm filming a Newman documentary, and we needed to get the cameras in my car because I'm driving Paul Newman's car, and you never know what happens during the course of a race, practice, qualifying, whatever, could be great material.
Yeah.
What if I got into a crazy accident?
Yeah.
And we didn't have... Yeah. So we got there Saturday morning for the 11 o'clock run, and my crew had maybe been out a little late, maybe been drinking a little bit, maybe had to get some tickets, some passes, whatever it was. They weren't there in time to get the cameras in the car, and I yelled at the camera crew, what do you got? And the guy had a GoPro, and he just stuck it like to the dashboard, and there was a big accident. And then when I got out of the car, everyone had arrived. And when I got out of the car, I was not in a good mood because, A, there was a big accident and we got our whole session scrubbed. Mm. And, B, no one was there to put the cameras in the car before we split. And then I wanted to know why people weren't taking pictures
of the
right now of the car before it gets tarped over because they They tarp them up. Yeah. Where are you? What are you doing now?
Yeah.
I'm in the car. You guys are standing at the pits. I want you running out down pit lane, finding that car and taking pictures. And I was douchey about it because I'm doing a documentary and I'm here to party.
Yeah.
But also, I need these pictures of that CSL BMW that has its whole front end taken off. And that's when I got douchey with people. Would you say that's accurate, Chris?
Yeah, I actually didn't see that douchiness. I got it secondhand because Nate ran up to me before I even got to you. You need to take pictures. Adam's like, he didn't say douchey.
Yeah, they're douchey and pissed. You just sound pissed.
I was like,
taking your hands off the wheels.
Why are we all hanging around here when there's a bunch of shit going on over there?
Yeah.
And go get it.
Yeah.
And, but so I think that's a fine example of being in, you know, laid back mode and then being in party mode and in just being in work mode too. Like when people are doing their cameras and doing whatever.
You're in party mode, you're racing. Certainly you must have, before you got on that track, attended to your will.
Oh, yeah. Hell to the, yeah. No, they asked
Did you?
You. Yeah. No, not right before I got in the car.
Did you have it all set up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They ask you when you're getting in where they go, who's your benefactor?
Wow, nice.
They literally bring up your benefactor.
That's nice.
It's sweet. It makes you brim. I was beaming with confidence before I got in a car. It's like my wife. Well, what's her emergency contact? No, they go, emergency contact, and they go, who's your benefactor?
Wow.
And they go, same person. Mm. They go, all right. She's home with her fingers crossed. Hit that wall. Most Americans don't have a will.
I know. That's why I bring it up.
So damn sad. Well, not with LegalZoom. Now there's no excuse.
There's
I understand.
There's no excuse. There really is no excuse.
LegalZoom.com. Yeah. Takes 20 minutes. You go online. 20 minutes. Soup to nuts. Reasonably priced. Sit at your computer. Take care of business. Don't let the government get hold of
Please.
All your precious belongings and your money and all that stuff. No, let it go to your loved ones. Best of all, LegalZoom has 12 years of experience helping people with important legal matters. They can help matters. They can help you with your will. They can help you with other things as well. They're LegalZoom, baby. They're number one. And by the way, you want to get 15% off? Hurry. Go to LegalZoom.com today.
This offer ends in a few days. To get your special discount, be sure to enter Drew, D-R-E-W, in the referral box at checkout. For wills, powers of attorney, trust, and more, go to LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom can provide self-help services at your specific direction or connect you with an attorney, but they are not a law firm.
All right. So I think that about does it.
Yeah.
If people want to support the show, you click through Amazon at AdamAndDrDrewShow.com. Put a little wind in the sails of the pirate ship. Subscribe via PayPal. Dr. Drew, again, it's hot out here. We got the air conditioning blowing.
It's
God
true.
Knows what that's costing me.
It's true.
And, of course, our reunion tour, Volume 1, highlights from the first three shows, Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, Denver, all under $5, available on iTunes and AdamCarolla.com. So until next time. Until next time. This is Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew, Chris Maxipan, and Gary Haftard saying mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.